Cochrane for all. Better evidence for better health decisions.
Hello everyone, I'm Douglas Basnock in this case, working with Beyond the Room at Cochrane for All. And I'm joined by Holger Schunemann, who's works at McMaster, Professor of Epidemiology. Would you like to introduce yourself, Holger?
Sure, thank you. Yeah, my name is Holger Schunemann. I am director of Cochrane Canada, and I work at McMaster University, which is in Hamilton, Ontario, in Canada, obviously.
Brilliant. And what I wanted to ask you about today was the grade system for appraising evidence and assigning a level of confidence to the recommendations. We heard in this morning's plenary about the problem that not all evidence is created equal. And I think some of the people who are perhaps new to systematic reviews, getting involved in health, I think it would be helpful for them to know that we have a systematic approach to dealing with these grey areas where one piece of evidence might be more reliable than another. So I was going to ask if you could summarise for that audience what is grade and how is it being used in practice?
Sure, I'm very happy to. So as you just indicated, not evidence is created equally, which basically means in layman's terms there is good research and there is not so good research, or bad research to say it in other terms. And the grade system or the grade approach tries to exactly do what you described, and that is to find out how much certainty or confidence we can put in evidence that has been synthesized, for instance, through a systematic review. There is a second step to that approach, to the grade approach, which then identifies the criteria that support making a decision. And that goes beyond the simple evidence assessment and includes a process of judgments on the basis of that evidence and conclusions, which may be a recommendation in a healthcare guideline or a coverage decision or a health policy type of decision. So these two aspects we try to keep separate when we explain the approach. So I start with the first one, which is much more relevant for systematic review authors, which is essentially following good systematic review practices, that is, compiling evidence in a transparent way. And I should say that the main accomplishment of GRADE, which is an approach that has been around for about 18 years now, we started working about 18 years ago, basing it on previous work that had been done. But the main accomplishment is achieving transparency in the judgments, and then also allow for informed discord or informed conversations about where researchers may not agree, where the public may not agree with researchers, and so on. But the great approach utilizes a structured approach to working through the evidence and making, again, making assessments about the certainty of the evidence, starting with a simple evaluation: how well are the studies done? Are there any important limitations? Has there been any bias introduced in the way that the study was conducted? That's the very first aspect. And it's beginning with a assessment of single research pieces and ends up with an assessment of that bias across all of the research that is included in a knowledge synthesis. Then the next question that we ask one of the next questions that we ask in sequence: how well does this evidence with regards to the populations that were studied, the interventions, that includes tests, the comparisons, and the health outcomes, how well does this evidence relate to the original question that a systematic review author or a guideline panel may have had? It's an applicability issue, but we call that we evaluate how direct or how indirect the evidence is. Mm. The third domain that we are looking at is, now, a systematic review tries to identify a fairly homogeneous body of evidence. We're now looking at, here should be a homogeneous body of evidence. What if we find differences in the results? We call it inconsistency. We try to explain that inconsistency. If we cannot explain inconsistency, the studies should be showing the same, then we lower our confidence. And then two additional factors that lead to lowering our certainty are related to when there is very sparse data and there are very explicit rules in GRADE in terms of how to operationalize the assessment. When there is sparse data, we lower our certainty and publication bias. That is, research that should be published but hasn't been published and might have important influence impact on the actual interpretation of the results that would lower our certainty further. For, in particular, non-randomized studies, so studies that have not used randomization to allocate individuals to either treatment or tests or comparisons, there are three domains that lead to increasing our certainty, in particular when we deal with very large effects. That typically increases our certainty that a threshold is crossed by an intervention in terms of an effect. It has to do with when there are dose-effect relationships, that typically increases our certainty. And then a complicated methodological, epidemiological domain that we also look at. But these eight domains essentially are being looked at in a structured way, first one after another, and then integrating it, going back and saying, okay, how does that domain relate to the other domain in order to come up with an overall assessment. The GRADE approach is a conceptual framework, as we would say it, or a system to assess evidence. Obviously, it is used by over 100 organizations around the world. It's the approach that is used by the World Health Organization, by NICE in the UK to assess evidence, by many guideline developers and health technology agencies and professional societies around the world. So we've seen an enormous uptake over the past 18 years or so. And the reason, we believe, is still, despite the fact that there are very complex assessments that are being done, the simplicity of its use with regards to communicating the key findings at the end. And that is really, I think that has really been one of the reasons for the successes.
So people who are using the GRADE approach, they'll run through a sequence in the same order every time. And so, for example, if we find inconsistency in the results of the different papers that are going into the review, that raises a question as to these papers might be actually looking at something different from each other. They're not actually looking at the same question, or there's something else going on here, maybe some missing data. Because if the papers were looking at the same question, we'd expect consistent results. And so all these quite difficult assessments in trying to answer one question, it's an extraordinary achievement. I wonder what your personal reflection is on how in practice this works out. I mean, what are the problems? Is it easy to get, for example, if I was to sit and look at a paper and apply some GRADE criteria to it, and you were to do it to the same paper, would we get the same result?
Mm-hmm.
What studies have you done to demonstrate the validity of the approach?
Yeah, so very good. So there are questions about validity and reliability. That referring a lot to reliability. So a couple of points that are really important. We have paid great attention over the past 15 years to develop good operationalization manuals, I would say. And most importantly, GRADE has an official software package. It's called GRADE Pro, the GRADE Profiler, or GRADE Pro GDT, that integrates this assessment with instructions, making it a bit more foolproof than if the assessment was just done on paper without the instructions, and standardizing these judgments. Once we have started to use these type of approaches, our reliability or reproducibility, that is two raters coming up with similar ratings, has improved to certainly in the measurement world to very acceptable levels. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say judgment is involved. We don't expect perfect agreement because right now we are not at a stage where results are equally well reported, so that we would really expect complete agreement. But GRADE, the benefit of GRADE is to know on what we disagree. And that really has not been there in terms of a framework before.
And that's very interesting, I think, particularly where we come to, you know, some of the sort of where the rubber meets the road sort of things around clinical decision making, to have that transparency around around the disagreement. If I'm looking at a systematic review or a guideline, and I'm trying to think, well, has this guideline been developed using the appropriate methods? What sort of signposts should I be looking for that would tell me, okay, here's an area where there's some uncertainty, and this is the type of debate. So if I wanted to get involved and understand what the nature of that is, do the grade assessments, are they part of the published document, or is there a way of getting that detail?
Yes, so we use the GradePro software to produce what we call summary of findings tables that have become an integral part of Cochrane reviews, but of many other reviews as well. And these are brief tables summarizing the key results of the review. And they go beyond what is in the research world typically used, an abstract of the finding. The summary of findings table basically lists the important questions and the relevant outcomes for decision making, and it includes in an assessment in a simple cell an assessment of the certainty of the evidence that one can have in terms of the intervention effect or the test effect on that specific outcome, including numerical descriptors. And then from there, we look at it in a layer type of approach. From there, a user of the information can go and understand exactly why, for instance, the certainty may have been rated down. It's a four-category certainty level from high to low certainty of the evidence. So that can be easy to obtain. We also link that to what we now call interactive summary of findings tables, which allow the user to understand the evidence even better and play with the information to the extent that it is best understandable.
And to someone who's coming at that sort of information for the first time, what advice would you have for them in terms of what do they need to read to get themselves clued up about it, and how should they interpret this? So, you know, for example, a specific outcome that our guideline makes some recommendations on might be at a different time frame from the one that interests me, or it might be defined slightly differently, or if it's a, you know, if I'm a patient, there might be something, an outcome that's slightly different that I'm interested in. So what advice would you give to people who are going to try to grapple with that information in making a decision?
Perhaps beginning with looking at the right summaries. So Cochrane reviews also have different types of summaries that express in narrative format what is in the summary of findings table. So if I'm truly a lay person coming to a topic for the very first time, perhaps it's best to focus on the plain language summary that includes a narrative about the certainty of the evidence assessment as well as the effect sizes. But then typically what we learn is that most patients, once they become interested in a topic, they learn very quickly and want more information. So under those circumstances, the summary of findings table may be helpful, but we believe very strongly that systematic reviews should be integrated in what we call decision frameworks, where more information than just the effect of an intervention is displayed. So for instance, with regards to how important are the outcomes, how do patients value the outcomes that are being addressed, issues around feasibility or acceptability of an intervention. So and for that, that's typically the role of a guideline, we would produce different type of summaries. So we have patient-friendly summaries we directly develop through, or we are now able directly through the software in collaboration with guideline developers to develop interactive decision aids that can be placed on the web, printouts, and we have some really good examples for how this actually works and how it can inform the patients, people, professionals, but also policymakers. Yeah.
Cochrane for All. Better evidence for everyone. Follow the hashtag Cochrane for All to get the science and evidence to empower better decisions.